The average goldfish is thought to have a memory bank of around 3 seconds. And apparently nowadays, we as human beings aren't so far behind the mark with regards to our shortening attention spans. As we attempt to navigate our way across the ever-amassing information superhighway, it is important to consider how we take this information in terms of storing it in that memory bank. UK professor and founding editor of the journal Memory Studies, Andrew Hoskins, has just completed his Down Under tour, presenting the academic paradoxes he faces through his body of work and what he describes as an ever-growing obsession with finding out our past, says in turn this is changing the culture of journalism itself.
I mean, the fact that so much of life is routinely recorded, whether we know it or whether we're willing to have our everyday activities recorded, I think opens up the possibility of what I call emergence, that the possibility that information about an event that was not known about it to suddenly emerge at very kind of unpredictable and prescribed times to actually transform even very fixed narratives about event. And one of the examples that I use, if I may just give this, is the execution of Saddam Hussein. Initially, the first globally broadcast coverage of the news of Saddam Hussein being executed was that the hanging was dignified to the extent that any execution can be dignified, of course. But the idea was that it was a success story for the Iraqi government, for Iraqi justice. Iraqi justice was seen as finally kind of reaching a state of order to the extent that it was congratulated around the world, especially by Western governments. And then, a matter of a few hours later, what suddenly emerged on the internet was the video of Saddam's execution, which showed that it was not in no way a dignified end. It was almost a baying mob and a very kind of chaotic and disorderly event. And this video, the emergence of this video, a couple of million hits straight away online. It was downloaded to videotape, sold on the streets of Baghdad. So you had this very kind of very immediate dissemination of a bit of information that completely transformed the news story of only just a day earlier. And of course, undermined the case that the Iraqi justice was getting its act together. But that potential for events to kind of come back, for recordings to come back and haunt us, I think is greater than ever. And this is one of the reasons why in the UK we have such a kind of bland political discourse, because it's just so easy. In terms of the stuff that feeds into, that creates our sense of who we are, our connections with others, memory is less a question of remembering and more a question of knowing where to look. So to some extent there's much less need to remember. The idea that because we have such ready access to anything and everything via Google, more or less, I don't accept that, that's the case, but there was a perception that that is the case. In some ways, pushes the need to actually store the memory inside our head. It's been kind of pushed to one side. And so that creates, a very different sense of how we come to store and remember and understand our past. If we distribute our sense of self, across and through our digital devices, be they the personal stuff, the highly personal stuff, or the much more social and publicly shared stuff. And of course, the blurring of those distinctions increasingly.
Well, that's right. It's like the example of having the two worlds existing in the one, like being on your phone and talking and then saying, this is a private conversation to someone sitting beside you on the train, and that kind of brings it all back.
Yeah, but of course, there's a downside to this. Mm. Some people argue that the very fact that, remembering's great, and remembering others and connecting with others is great, but what about forgetting? Some people argue that, Facebook's other social networking sites and our digital trails, to some extent, stop us from moving on. So imagine your entire social circle on Facebook. You connect with them all the time. It's very much how you order your social life. Your partner perhaps is plugged into the same Facebook group. What if you split up with your partner and you don't want to talk to them ever again? Well, you could delete your Facebook account, or try to, but there's a sense that your partner then is still plugged into your social network. The problem with this is, how is it it makes it perhaps more difficult to move on, to advance, to develop, to escape from a particular social network. So it's almost like a social network that is that it was with you for life, digitally, potentially, and it's very difficult to escape in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. People are in turn making their own memories of you, but it's their own, and that can be quite different to how you want to be remembered, I guess.
Absolutely. The private, the personal, and the public are all suddenly merged together, and it's very, very difficult then to try and separate them out in the future. Especially when this, you know, as I said before, this notion of emergence, photographs, images of you when you were a teenager or when you were a kid or when you were just young and stupid like most people are at some point in their lives, comes back to haunt you, and it might affect your career, your relationships in the future, your job status. Mm. And so in some ways there's this sense that our digital trails are storing up potential trouble for us. And the problem with especially the younger generation is a sense of a digital literacy, a sense of a lack of awareness as to, you know, what they're storing up for their future in terms of what they upload and put out there, be it on social network sites or blogs or Twitter or just websites more generally.
And I guess just as a kind of conclusive idea or thought to go off, the role of journalism has been in great upheaval pretty much since you've started the journal. Well, since I started a master's degree in journalism, it certainly was the worst timing. And in terms of this digital literacy and the fact that everyone is now publishing, everyone is now a photographer, like it's the device. That I think one of your papers said the idea of it being the device and the networking within that and the individual sort of accessibility towards it. So I guess now with this idea of these kind of sites creating memory and us becoming so dependent on it, does this offer then a very significant role to journalists in a reinvented sense?
Yeah, well, more than ever, I guess. I mean, a lot of people argue, you know, they talk about camcorder journalism or amateur journalism, whatever you want to call it. It is undoubtedly a revolution. But at the same time, we think about how we actually ordinarily come to understand the world through television news, for example. Okay, fine. Television news always calls for people's mobile phone pictures and images, etc., around events. But ultimately, they are the editors. They are the interpreters. They are the, you know, in a lot of work we've done talking to audiences, there is still seems to be a real desire to have someone who is familiar and authoritative and competent to make sense of this mass array of amateur images and footage that, you know, daily kind of comes across our screens and goes into newsrooms. So the role of the journalist is more important than ever. But of course, you know, in the world we're living in now, as you're aware more than anyone else, with shrinking audiences, huge explosion in the number of journalists and news providers and news producers chasing a kind of a, you know, shrinking market, I think there's all kinds of moral questions about the kind of news we're getting in those circumstances. You know, you've got to move to a constantly kind of squeeze mainstream news, and the rest of the news services are really moving to the edges. And I think the advent of digital technologies has a lot to answer for, and at this point in time it's very difficult to know where this trend is going.
Founder of Academic Journal, Memory Studies, and professor at the University of Nottingham, I was speaking there to Andrew Hoskins.